Hello, everybody, and welcome back to The Great Indoors. Now, this is episode 8 of season 8, coming to you again from MWC 2024, right here in Barcelona. Not long to go in this season now. Now, the term big data reached the peak of its hype cycle roughly 10 years ago. Gartner's hype cycle, a graphical depiction of the maturity and adoption of technologies and applications, placed big data at the peak of inflated expectations in about late 2012. Now, this was a time when expectations for data, moreover big data, were extremely high. And it was widely discussed as a transformative force in business and technology. The excitement was driven by the emergence of new technologies that could process and analyze vast data sets far beyond the capability of traditional databases or even the human imagination, coupled with the increasing availability of data from the internet, sensors, and other digital sources. It was called a data deluge. Now, over the following years, as practical challenges and complexities in implementing big data projects became clearer, the discussion shifted more towards nuanced and realistic expectations, leading big data to move through what was known as the trough of disillusionment, as many new technologies do, and towards more mature stages of the hype cycle. Now, that all changed on November the 30th, 2022, when OpenAI launched ChatGPT. Fueled by more data, computational power, and algorithmic efficiency than we could ever imagine, we suddenly realized that maybe all that hype over data and what we could potentially use it for wasn't hype after all. Welcome to The Great Indoors, a podcast where we look at the technological implications brought about by the next industrial revolution and how this can potentially help solve the biggest problems facing humanity. I'm your host, Matthew Roberts, and joining me as ever is my co-pilot and producer, Larissa Yee. So TGI, we're here still in Barcelona at MWC 2024. And as I've mentioned several times, it's bigger and better than you could ever imagine. The Amdocs booth and TGI recording areas are simply stunning, and our guests during this season and at the show are quite simply out of this world. So over, 2 weeks we have left now in the season, we will continue bringing you actual conversations recorded from the biggest telecom show on the planet, and every single one is incredible. So as I mentioned there at the beginning, today, we're talking about data. In fact, we're going all in on data. And I think if you've been listening to this season so far, there's no getting away that generative AI and AI as a whole has been the talking point at MWC. In fact, the biggest talking point at any MWC I can ever recall. And going back to it, generative AI could indeed be considered that missing killer use case that the big data hype from a decade ago might not have fully anticipated. And this perspective arises from several developments and the unique capabilities of Gen AI that align exceptionally well with the evolving needs and scales of big data. Now, this goes along with the progress in neural network design, computational power, and algorithmic efficiency. But what that has done is catapulted AI from simple machine learning models to complex systems capable of learning from vast data sets to generate original content, whether that's text, images, code, or even music. You know, you've played with it. Generative AI enriches the big data landscape by adding a layer of creation and innovation that extends beyond traditional analysis and forecasting. And this could be seen as fulfilling that promise that the early hype around big data began to explore but could never fully develop or deliver at the time. It represents a natural and powerful evolution of the big data concept into something even more transformative than we could ever have imagined at the time. So my guests today are really true data gurus. These guys are the Jedi Masters of Data, and we're going to really dig deep into data, big data, the importance of data, and the future of generative AI. So firstly, I'm joined by Mr. Matt Dugan from AT&T. Matt is the EVP for data at AT&T and has pretty much spent his entire career looking at data. Then I'll be joined by Mr. Don Tursell. He's the Global Head of Partnerships at Google Cloud, who also has an entirety of his career devoted to data, data solutions, and what it can do for humanity. So let's get going. This is going to be a cracker of an episode. So buckle up. Let's get started. So my next guest on the Great Indoors at MWC 2024 here in Barcelona, he's come all the way from Atlanta. He's the EVP for data at AT&T. Mr. Matt Dugan, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being here. So we're approaching the sunset almost of the show this year. And before we get into what you've seen at the show and everything you do, just give our listeners a history of yourself and your role at AT&T currently.
Okay. Well, like we said, my name is Matt. No. I've been at AT&T now for a little over 15 years in aggregate. No. This is actually my fourth time with the company, like with the family of companies. Mm-hmm. So over a 25 plus year career now, I spent over half of it with AT&T, part of the AT&T family.
Yeah.
And I've done a lot of roles. I started in field engineering. So think poles and holes, manholes and poles for cables and distribution. And did that for a while and decided that I wanted to make a shift more into technology and software, one of my areas of passion that I developed as a young man. And went and got a computer engineering degree and made that pivot. Got brought into AT&T as a developer and have gone up since then.
Yeah.
I've gotten to do a lot of roles. I've worked in application development, middleware and services, back-end systems integration. Getting into data and AI, did advertising, MarTech, built CDPs, managed data platforms, and now in the current state, work on all of the underpinnings of everything from our oldest technologies in the mainframes, all the way up to our very latest stuff, which is entirely cloud native and hyperscale.
Wow. And what do you think of the show this year? What have you seen? What's been the talking point for you?
Well, this is my first time at MWC.
So is it really?
It's definitely been an experience. There's a lot of people, virtually nothing in the way of foot traffic control procedures.
Yeah.
Almost if you've ever watched a sci-fi movie where they have completely autonomous vehicles and they're all going everywhere all at once and they somehow make their way. That is what it's the experience on the floor of MWC, that's for sure. Seeing it this year and seeing it, everything come together, it's really amazing displays, really amazing products and services that are on display, a lot of really cool demos.
Yeah.
I think it's actually wrong to call these as booths. Some of them are like micro cities. Full of independent stages and experiences to go see. And I just walking around and seeing the audience that's gathered around and how many people are so excited to see something move. An animation or a presentation.
Yeah.
You can tell that there's a lot of energy here.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And, you know, I've been coming to this show for many, many, many years. And, you know, you always come away from the show with like one talking point, maybe two big things that you see everybody double down on. Is there something that you've seen here that you think, oh my gosh, that everybody is, you know, this is big?
Going from halls 1 through 8, you just take one look at the signage and you see everyone is talking about some level of integration of AI. Most of them are talking about an integration of generative AI.
Yeah.
But you balance that with what I've seen in the sessions. And when the talk turns into sort of just the general fluff of generative AI, people are getting up and moving.
Oh,
everyone
really?
Is beyond that point now. So that the adoption curve is so steep that people aren't willing to sit to be introduced to generative AI again. Wow. They're like, no, we got this. Like, I want to hear about actual deployments. I want to hear about edge cases and experience.
Yeah.
I want to understand how this is applicable in my company and not in general terms.
Wow. That's really interesting. I haven't heard that at all from my guests. But
it may not be a popular opinion to go spreading around that people are getting up and leaving sessions, but you know, you see
it. It's totally right, because there's a lot of monotony. There's a lot of repetition. There's a lot of buzzwords and slogans being associated with it that are repeating themselves over and over again. And like you said, you want to see a demonstrable example of clear value that, you know, and new stuff, right?
Well, I think there's a difference between a generation of interest and a generation of hunger.
Yeah.
You know, interest is, I want to hear anything that is out there because I want to start making an understanding. I want to start learning. I want to know.
Yeah.
And this hunger is for growth.
Yeah.
Right. If I'm not growing here, let me move to the one that can help me grow, because that's what I'm trying to do. I already got it. I already know that I want it. I want to get something that's applicable in my space that I can take back with me.
Yeah. That's fascinating. That's a really fascinating insight. And I noticed from your resume, Matt, and your title of head of data, you've been involved in the data space for many years, right?
A little while. I mean, yeah. In engineering disciplines and in information technology, you deal with data a long time.
Yeah.
My job titles predate specialization.
Right.
So there was a time when we were just called developer, and then we were very happy to be started being called engineers. You know, some of us are actually engineers by trade.
Yeah.
And so that was great. But now there's like every kind of engine.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Now we're inventing new ones. Now there's prompt engine, right?
Like
new disciplines that are popping up. It's almost a micro-segmentation of the overall discipline of problem solving.
Yeah.
So in that mode of problem solving with technology, we deal with data since forever. Even some of my first technological jobs were dealing with a database and dealing with information, how to cultivate it and present it back. So it's been a long time in data. It's only been, though, about 10 years now in what I would call big data, petabyte scale data.
Yes, yeah. And the reason why I think my previous job in Amdocs before I came over to North America is I headed up the marketing for the big data division at Amdocs. Mm-hmm. And at the time, this was 9-10 years ago, so right on your time scales, but it was hyped. It was at the top of the Gartner hype cycle. What did they used to call it? The peak of disillusionment before it went into the trough of...
The peak of interest before the trough of disillusionment.
That was it. Yeah, that was it. Yes.
That's the model.
That was the model. And I always remember being here in Barcelona, talking to analysts, talking to press. And I think there was a hype about big data and just the term. But I don't think people really understood what the definition, what fell under that umbrella. And it was a number of different things. Obviously, the data management systems and, you know, moving from a data warehouse to a data lake and things, and just moving from regular BI to actionable analytics, everybody was getting excited about. And then there was the data scientists who are apparently going to create all this magic with this, you know, swathes of data in these clusters. And I remember always being asked, what's the killer use case?
Right.
What's the killer use case? What's the, and you know, in the world of telco, you know, you'd always say things like network optimization and next best offer and, you know, all the things, improve customer care, all these things. But then this was my own proclamation, by the way, coming up with this. But then when generative AI reignited the hype about AI. AI wasn't created on the 30th of November, 2022. It existed from 1947 in its format. But this this defibrillator, if you will, on the big data hype came up again. And it occurred to me, and I'm interested to get your thoughts on this. It occurred to me that maybe generative AI is the killer use case for big data that we were waiting for.
I was actually going to say the same thing.
Oh, really?
If you remember, the promise of big data was that there's all this data out there.
Yeah.
If you're not collecting it, you're dumb, or you should be.
Yeah, yeah.
And well, we can't really tell you why, but we can tell you that if you have it, you're sitting on a, you know, precious metals like gold mine.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Of your ability to transform your business if you only had it. Oh, but isn't that a lot of work to collect all the data? Yeah, but you got to do it.
Yeah.
Don't have all the data,
yeah,
you're
yeah.
failing.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, fine. So everybody collects all the data. And then it's, well, but don't I have to process my data? Like, don't I have to like cleanse it? Don't I have to look at structured data? No.
Cool.
You don't have to worry about any of that because you can just data mine.
Yeah. Right?
Go in your unstructured data. Your storage has completely changed. You know, you're no longer, you know, at the time you wanted localized compute and storage.
Yeah.
Which was a deviation from the prior iteration of the pendulum swing of I want network attached storage and differentiated compute. Right now it turned into I want general compute on top of attached storage.
Yes.
Which is like interesting. And now we're moving back the other way again because now we have hyperscale and the cloud. And even though storage is sort of conventional, technologically network attached, you don't get the latency delay.
Yeah.
The difference though is what became big data, I would call it failed promise, which is if you have all the data, you will somehow be successful. You
know,
step one, step two, step three, step four, profit.
Yeah.
That question mark is now really, it's you're supposed to have had AI on top
of it. Yes. Yeah. So
the first thing we did in collection was then realize that what we needed to do was create structure. Now we've created structure, but the volumes are so high that putting humans to task against it means that you can get some penetration in some models and some insights, but you're not necessarily going to be able to create meta models, create convergence of insights from multiple different data domains. And it's also still really hard to tell when your data is lying to you. Like you pulled in all the data.
Yeah.
Some of it's garbage.
Yeah.
And, or but some that, of it
there
is
was
misleading.
There was the V's, wasn't there?
Volume, veracity,
variety. That's it. Yep. Yeah. So yeah, sorry, I interrupted. When you said, it just jumped straight into my head.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so now on the generative AI side, it becomes, okay, well now I have the reason to actually go through my data and start to pick apart the pieces with some assistance, right? But pick apart the pieces that really matter.
Yeah.
And so now the notion of the data race is over. Now it's a data expectation. I'm expected to pull together the right data to deliver the right business answers. And I have to enable the business to interrogate those answers. Right? So generative is a great pattern.
Is there anything that scares you about generative? And I know that comes up here all the time and there's all these comparisons to sci-fi, but I'll tell you what I heard yesterday, and I won't disclose my source whilst we're having this conversation, but he basically said, and I'd heard somebody say this in one of the keynotes, was it's only limited by the extent of our imagination. Right. That, you know, and I'm going to ask you the same question in a moment, but I ask all our guests, what are they doing with it? And 90% of the answers I get back are unique. So the breadth of these use cases, and when the mobile telephone came into fruition, what did you do with it? Well, I made a call and everyone did the same.
Yeah.
But with generative AI, the breadth of how people are using it with their own creativity and the things that they're doing are vastly different based on their imagination or which I thought was an interesting point, but then he said to me, "I don't agree." I put that quote to the gentleman, and he came back, "I don't agree." Mm-hmm. He said, "It's limited by the machine's imagination, not people's imagination." And I said, "Well, what do you mean by that?" He said, "The machines are starting to create use cases without being pushed or asked to create use cases."
Yeah.
And I was like, "Really?" He said, "Yeah, I can see it." He wasn't worried about it, but I thought it was an interesting point that he put across. What are your thoughts on that and some of the, I won't call them ethical issues. Well, maybe they are ethical issues. I don't know. But that side of the pace of where we're going.
Yeah, it's, I get the sort of apocalyptic nature of it, right?
You know,
humanity worships the sun. Humanity evolves. Humanity invents machines. Humanity invents AI. AI invents machines. AI perfects AI. You know, world blows up. Humanity worships the sun, right? Like this is the loop, right?
I've seen that cartoon.
Yeah, it's a very good one.
Yeah.
So it's provoking in thought in a sense. Now, unfortunately, we've developed to an extent that it may not be humanity looking at the sun and maybe the roaches.
Yeah.
I would say I generally agree What is frightening is not the sense that the machine can operate in and of itself and make some internal reasonings. I think what is potentially not well understood is to what extent the machine can make those reasonings that we can't unpack and explain. In that LLM space, we worry about poison. I'll give an example. I was using an enterprise chat client. Some bug occurred, and all of my text that I'm typing starts appearing perfectly backwards, as right. if for every character I then preponed my cursor to the very beginning right. and then added the next character, right? So perfectly backwards. And I thought, maybe, you know, I'm in the middle of my workflow. I'm trying to solve a problem. I'm working with people at the moment. I'm thinking maybe this is just on my screen. So I click send. And the response that comes back is, maybe we need to invent an LLM to decode whatever Matt's trying to tell us. I'm like, okay, great. So I said, well, that's interesting. So before I go reboot my computer and try to clear whatever this is going on, let me take what I wrote. I put like a paragraph in and it started happening. And so then I went over to our GPT-4 instance that we call inside of AT&T. And I said that, and I meticulously backwards typed, translate this text. And I pasted in my paragraph of perfectly backwards input. And it responded as if it didn't understand why it was being requested to translate anything. He says, clearly the author is discussing blah, 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 blah. The language is in English. Right.
I
thought, well, that's odd.
Yeah.
So, but I guess, you know, in my thoughts, you know, sort of my naive understanding of what might be going on behind the scenes, it's like, okay, well, if I create all these n-gram clusters of adjacency and everything else, then if I put in perfectly backwards text or perfectly forward text, I'm likely to get the same graph, just inverted one way, you know, from left to right effectively.
Right.
And maybe there's some variation according to where spaces were and things like that, but you know, close enough that the variation of just common misspellings and other things could still be satisfied and it still looks like English text. I thought, well, that's interesting.
Yeah.
So if that works, then there are probably quite surreptitious ways of poisoning LLM inputs and being unable to explain why some result is coming back out.
Yeah.
And we see already.
That's really interesting.
In the deployment of LLMs that are publicly accessible, that bias has been introduced into the LLMs on the part of the providers of those interfaces because that, you know, in the name of political correctness or certain sensitivities or other things. And it's like, okay, but do we fully understand this? Like what are we creating when we introduce those biases? And these are now explicit biases, right? What about implicit biases? What about biases that are created because of structure in the data that just occurs that we don't see a pattern as a human observer, as a human understander of the language, we don't see that this patterns exist, but it's in the subtext. And then do these models pick up on subtext? Like we find that they pick up on all kinds of interesting things. Like it's possible to get instructions in these in many different ways. Do we understand that problem really well? Or are we going to end up with the thing that you asked me, what do I fear? I fear a misunderstood implementation being put in a decision-making process that we can't decode. Even domestically in the U.S., we have the notions of credit scores, and these algorithms are proprietary, but they're known, right? They're known by the people that provide them.
Yeah.
The internal state of the LLM is not known, right? It's not knowable per se. Yeah. And so if you have something like this, and now this is deciding what level of medical treatment that you get, or does your driverless car turn left or turn right or hit the brakes? Like these things are reasoning decisions that we want to be able to, in very great detail, be able to explain and rationalize.
So when you make a mistake, when something bad happens,
who's
you
liable?
Can't correct it.
Well, you can't correct it, and who is liable?
Exactly. Wow, that's really interesting, Matt. That's really interesting. Now we're running out of time. We're going to come down a little bit from what we were talking about. And we have a fun quick fire round called TGI to go. And it's just so we can finish on a bit of a laugh, a bit of fun. And it gives our listeners a different perspective of you, Matt. So should we do TGI to go?
Let's go for it.
TGI to go.
Hockey or basketball?
Basketball.
Which team?
Detroit Pistons.
Ah, right.
Is that because did you... grew my favorite team as a child.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Ah, interesting. ChatGPT-4 or Gemini Advanced?
GPT-4.
Have you used Gemini Advanced?
Yes.
What do you think?
Too biased. It's overtly biased.
Yeah. Oh, really?
It's like I just don't know.
Singing or dancing?
Neither.
No? That's okay.
I would say I'd be more willing to observe singing than dancing.
Okay, that's a good one. That's a good one. When you get back to the US, you've had a week of tapas, a week of paella, cerveza, rioja. Would you rather go for a Japanese or a Thai dinner?
Thai.
Thai. And what do you? Is this your first time to Barcelona as a city?
It is.
Do you like it?
Oh, it's amazing. Yeah, yeah. Sort of everything is condensed together. Like there's, you know, what I was really struck by is we're standing in the corner and we go, okay, where should we eat? So let's load restaurants on the map, right? And they're literally everywhere. Like throw a stone and it hits a restaurant's window and the owner comes out and shouts at you in Spanish. Like it's an amazing town for food and entertainment and all. And I could see why MWC would be here.
Yeah, excellent. That's good to hear. That's good to hear. Now, and I'll finish on this one. Star Trek or Star Wars?
For me, Star Trek. Yeah, I'll explain if you like. Star Trek is still in the mode of discovery. And Star Wars, sort of everything has already been uncovered. Some things have been forgotten and have to be rediscovered, but everything else is already discovered. Like, everybody is everywhere. And I think there's an attractiveness to the unknown in the Star Trek universe.
That's a brilliant answer. That's a brilliant answer, Matt. We finished the episode today. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
I've really enjoyed the conversation. It's been great having you, and maybe we'll see you here again next year. We can pick up where we left off and see how the world has changed. But
All right.
I hope you enjoyed the rest of your time here in Barcelona.
Sounds good. Thanks so much. Right,
so my next guest here at the Great Indoors MWC 2024 in Barcelona is Mr. Don Tursell, the Global Head of Partnerships at Google.
Google Cloud.
We have to be more specific. So how's it going today, Don? Thank you.
Oh, it's an exciting time to be here in Barcelona always. You know, every year it's a new experience. There's new capabilities, new value for operators. It's a chance to revisit with old friends.
Exactly.
Old partner friends.
Exactly. Yeah.
Great food, great wine as well. Yeah.
So, and where are you based in the US?
I'm based in the Bay Area, so there's a little bit of time travel to get here. But by this time, everyone's pretty well adjusted.
Exactly. Yesterday was a long day, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yesterday was a long day. And so for our listeners, Don, give us a bit of your history, your background, and your role at Google Cloud.
Sure.
I think it's fair to say, after I've studied your LinkedIn profile, you're a data guy, right?
Oh, I started in the data world in the late 80s, actually, at Oracle and Sun Microsystems, building systems for capturing and managing data, databases.
Yeah.
And then found a small company called Informatica that I was at for a very long time.
I know. Yeah, yeah.
That's where I actually had my first experience with Amdocs. We're a great relationship there.
Yeah.
Me and my team managed a lot of this enablement and use of Informatica by Amdocs. So have a long history with Amdocs. At Informatica, I led a number of cloud transformation initiatives, and that led me to go to a cloud provider.
Right.
And so I've been at Google Cloud now almost 7 years.
Wow.
So I've seen a lot of growth and change, and have a significant experience in the telecom industry, which is why 4 years ago I was asked to build our telecom ecosystem.
Right.
And Amdocs was the first partner that we engaged, being a market leader and also having a services and product bent, because we wanted to have Amdocs products on our platform, but also the ability to deliver those successfully to the customer.
Yeah, no.
And so I've been working on that now for 4 years with the team, and it's a global initiative. We have a number of live production customers on a variety of Amdocs solutions.
Wow.
Including the Data One solution at a couple customers, which is a big focus for Google Cloud at this event, AI and data.
Yes, of course.
Being one of our biggest advantages, helping any type of customer bring that to the cloud and use it for best advantage.
Yeah. Now, and it's interesting, and the reason I know about Informatica and my history was before I left the UK to North America, I headed up marketing for the big data division at Amdocs. And this was 8-9 years ago. And it was basically when big data and
on-prem big data.
Yeah, on-prem big data and actionable analytics were at the peak of the Gartner hype cycle, right? And I remember constantly, you know, being asked to articulate the hype around big data. What's the killer use case? What's the killer use case? That seemed to be the question. And, you know, there was next best offer, and there was obviously network optimization, and there was
customer intelligence is a big one.
Customer intelligence. Yeah. But this is my own proclamation, if you will. This whole show is about generative AI this year. I just heard on one of the keynotes, someone define it as a step change in humanity. So do you think that generative AI was the killer use case we were searching for 9 years ago? And has the hype been justified?
Well, I think if you look at AI's requirements for data, having the foundation in place is fundamental. You can't leverage generative AI models and marry it together with an enterprise's data platforms.
Yeah.
If you don't have that data foundation in place, I think a lot of those steps in the older big data world were taken, but it was also a bit of a lock-in and scale challenge from the technologies that were deployed and the infrastructure to run those technologies. There were use cases, but they were fairly narrow in scope because there was a few people that could understand them and build them and deliver on them. Now with generative AI, I think the monocratization of these capabilities is unbelievable. The speed and pace of innovation, and the turn and change on what you can do with large language models, applying them to use cases by just about anyone. There's consumer use cases.
Yeah.
And in our case, we're building our platform to address enterprises so that they can build out secure, scalable AI pipelines and use cases that leverage generative AI. So it is a huge inflection point.
Yeah.
You walk around this event and AI is just about everywhere. And I think being able to apply it has now become on the tip of reality, accelerating to real reality. And this is just the first phase because there's so much change going on. Every 3 to 6 months, there's an unbelievable innovation of which I'm very proud of Google Cloud and Google and Alphabet being at the tip of that because we contribute. You know, we just launched an open source model initiative. We embrace an open type of approach. So it is a new time. And I'd encourage everybody to stay educated, stay on the trends, experiment and try. Because that's the way that this whole evolution of AI is continuing. It's all about experimentation and having a foundation that Amdocs can leverage and deploy to their customers is what we're all about. And really bring that innovation so that partners can deploy it and customers can leverage that fully is what we're all about here at the show.
Yeah. So we talked about that inflection point. We didn't really see it coming. AI has been around for much longer than the 30th of November, 2023. And it was the consumer manifestation that has created all this buzz and hype right now. And I my question was, did you see this coming?
So I think many of us at Google and Alphabet knew these capabilities could be broadly applied. In fact, we were trying to apply them in individual customer use cases. Development of specific machine learning models using an enterprise's data. But the new large language model capabilities, the absorption of large data sets, and the techniques for accelerating the use of those.
Yeah.
Is something that is new breakthrough in the foundation and uniqueness in around this new generation of AI.
And in your role as head of partnerships, what partners are you looking for? What makes a good partner?
So we look for three types. There's services partners that can build and deliver solutions that provide value to our customers.
Yeah.
Whether they're in telecom or any industry. So our ecosystem is multifaceted to services partners, resell and selling partners, so it can help us scale, build a channel. And then innovative technology partners, whether that's the people that are actually in the generative AI world, building models.
Yeah.
Or tools around managing machine learning operations, ops, ML ops. We've heard all this buzzword technology.
Yeah.
That's all lifecycle management, management of models, deployment of models.
Yeah.
And then in our services partner ecosystem, we're really looking for partners like Amdocs who want to build a practice around generative AI.
Yeah.
Because they see how applying this technology for their customers can help add business value. A new type of unique business capability that Amdocs can help position for growth and solving problems that were really challenging.
Now, another interesting thing that used to exist in the big data hype days when I was involved with it was data scientists. That was like the hottest career you could pursue at the time, right? Everyone was like, it was like the hottest, you know, tell your children to go and do a data science degree because this is the thing that they need to do. In this world we live in now, would you give that advice to 16-year-old?
I still would. I have an 18-year-old and a 21-year-old, one of which is on the data scientist path.
Oh, really? Wow.
So that's good. I think there will always be, because it's a thinking science. It's how do you apply algorithms, mathematics, and techniques to solve business problems?
Yeah.
And so I think there's still a huge growth. But I think what has also changed is in the big data world, that community was so small and so specialized that the deployment of those technologies and capabilities were really locked in from a scalability perspective.
Yeah.
Which is why schools were encouraged to build these practices.
Right.
Now I think the techniques are more easily consumed by different levels of people in the organization.
Yeah.
And so there's less dependency on turning to a data wonk, if you will, in your team to do it all for you, because it's absorbable and usable by the masses.
Yeah.
And that's also by building on a strong foundation.
Yeah.
Of tooling and different level setting of how the capabilities are absorbed and used.
Yeah.
That really can help drive adoption and value.
Yeah. And what advice, you said that I think that's fascinating. Your daughter's going down the data science. Everybody is talking about prompt engineering, but everything's moving so quickly. Can academia keep up with the pace of change?
I think they're struggling with the pace, to be honest. But I have full confidence in the next generation of young people that they're more adaptable.
Yeah.
They have a different way of learning. They're not dependent on institutional teaching to absorb these capabilities. You know, you look at what people are doing on their phones these days, using it just in a general purpose consumer way.
Yeah.
And there's more exposure and appreciation. But the practices of prompt engineering and all the different capabilities and, applying models for what purpose, what context.
Yeah.
All of that is new, but they also still come back to having that data foundation.
Yeah.
So there's a place for everybody in this journey.
Yeah.
And, I think that the journey is getting more general purpose and usable. That's a big part of it.
And where do you think, what would be your prediction
We've seen this huge inflection point. We've seen an acceleration for cloud adoption. We've realized or starting to realize some of the prophecies that were predicted around, you know, data being the oil for the next industrial revolution. And I'm throwing around a lot of marketing slogans right now, but I'm in marketing. So what would you say, Dom? Where are we in 5 years' time? What would be your prediction? What will we be looking at?
Well, you could actually apply that vision to this event in a way, because monetization has been a term in the telco industry for a long time. And I really think that telcos have been trying to monetize their data in different ways.
Yeah.
Generative AI allows them to actually do that in an easier, more straightforward way. Maybe achieve some of the business results that they've seen from their investments.
Yeah.
So in 5 years, I see that every industry will be impacted significantly by AI. There will be a shakeout of leaders and a shakeout of followers. You know, there's also a whole world of startups that are evolving. There's dozens and dozens of new companies.
Yeah.
So there's a number of hills to be tackled from that too. So I always think that the reason I made my career in data, because that's where the basics and the foundation is built.
Yes. Yeah.
And that will never go away, but it will just be able to more easily apply and leverage that foundation in different ways. And who knows what's next? You know, right now there's consumer use on your phone. Search is being changed.
Yeah.
There's all kinds of different ways to leverage this capability that there are smarter people than I that are imagining these things, that in 5 years they will come.
That's the key word though, imagination. Because we've taught that to me, and that was a profound thought, was this is only limited by people's imagination.
Right.
I don't know if it's people's imagination. Not that we will ever have the involvement of machines in this process. There are use cases where new things are being discovered in the generative AI world.
Right.
That humans didn't know. They didn't imagine it either, you know? So that's part of why this whole world is evolving so quickly, is we're finding out some of these new capabilities as we're building these two bots, right? So.
Wow.
It's constantly evolving. So we don't know what's on the horizon.
That's right. So it's literally evolving on its own.
Absolutely.
So your point, it's not even people's imagination. And I think that is fascinating. Yeah. That is absolutely fascinating.
Totally agree.
Yeah. Is it a little scary as well?
Not scary to me, because I trust in our company's approach. Responsible AI is one of our mantras.
Yeah.
But it is, you know, we've already seen governmental intervention around the world. I think there's a whole evolution that's coming from that as well. The controls, policies.
Yeah.
And it's, rather than being scared of it, I think we need to embrace it and know that there are strong people in place that will watch out for consumers and enterprises. But as we've seen, there will be blips along the way. You have to get through them and understand why they happened.
Yeah.
And work on not having those be a problem.
I think, Don, I've had a real pleasure there. I think you've made some fantastic points that are going to stick with me for the rest of my interviews this week. I think that's been amazing. Now, how I finish the podcast is a quick fire round called TGI to go. I'm going to give you two preferences or two choices. You give me your preference, and it just helps our listeners understand you a little better, have a bit of fun to finish things off. So are you ready? Don, we'll do TGI to go.
TGI to go.
Would you rather go to Miami or Alaska?
Alaska. I'm not a hot weather type of person, although I vacationed in hot weather frequently.
Yeah.
But there's enough to do an Ammon adventuresome type. So I would love to go to Alaska.
Yeah, I've never been.
I've never been, but I have a funny story. My uncle is an adventurer. He's been to 49 capital cities. Oh. And Alaska is the last state that he's going to this summer to go to 50 oh, really? Out of 50.
Oh, really?
And so our family is trying to figure out how do we all make that happen for him.
Oh, that would be wonderful. That sounds incredible. That's really cool.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Do you prefer the LA Rams or the San Francisco 49ers? And you live in the Bay Area.
I live in the Bay Area, so I'm going to absolutely say the San Francisco 49ers, but I've been in the Bay Area pretty much my whole life. So I grew up a Raiders fan, but it's very difficult to be a Raiders fan in the Bay Area right now, so I've pivoted to being a 49ers fan.
But didn't the Raiders move to Las Vegas as well? Is that why it's difficult?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
They've abandoned us twice.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Oakland as well. Star Wars or Star Trek?
Star Wars, fanatic.
Yeah.
When the first ones came out, I grew up in Livermore, a very small town in the Bay Area.
Yeah.
There was a 50-person theater that we lined up for. I saw the first Star Wars movie in 74.
Yeah.
Not sure if that's correct.
I think it would be more like 77, I think.
77.
Yeah.
I was in junior high school, so I saw it 10 times. We would go a whole weekend.
Oh, really?
And just stay in the theater.
You know what's interesting? What's really interesting about that was I went back to the UK before I came to Barcelona. I hadn't been home for like 8 years. I hadn't been to the village or the little town I grew up in for 14 years because I moved down to London and then but I just happened to be passing through and I sort of went with my mother on a trip down memory lane. And we went to a little place called Colwyn Bay, which was the first time I went to the cinema. And I remember clearly the first time I went to the cinema and it was Empire Strikes Back.
The second movie, yeah.
The second, and we had a photograph taken. So it's really cool that you can remember. And I can remember that. That's T-Mobile or Verizon. That might be a bit of a touchy one.
No comment.
Yeah, I know. I understand.
Throw AT&T through this. Yeah, no comment.
Yeah. And we've had them both on the podcast this week. So now if you're going for dinner tonight, of course, we're in Barcelona. There's tapas. It's great, but we eat tapas and drink Rioja every night. But would you rather have Italian or Japanese food?
Oh, I would love... My second half, my wife is third generation Japanese American.
Oh, wow.
So I love Japanese food. Yeah. I would go for Japanese of all types.
Yeah.
So I'm a bit of a aficionado for Japanese food.
Oh, wow. So have you been to Japan?
I went to Japan with my family last summer for the first time.
Wow.
Spent 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Several different locations. Great experience for my children who are half Japanese. So they want to go back. You know, they love Japan.
That's awesome. Well, Don, we're out of time. We managed to do it on time, even we had some technical difficulties. I really appreciate you joining today.
Of course, Matthew. Thank you
very much. It's been a great conversation. There's some things there that are definitely going to pop up in other conversations that I have throughout the week. But I really appreciate your time today.
Oh, thank you. Enjoy the week and look forward to hearing this online.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So thank you, Matt. Thank you, Don. Brilliant conversations. Really, really brilliant conversations. Some of the most interesting, intelligent, thought-provoking conversations I'd had in my entire time here in Barcelona. So I really want to thank you for taking the time to speak to us during your busy schedule at the show. So please subscribe to our podcast and all the usual podcast channels. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts and enjoyed the show, please rate and review. Also visit our website, amdocs.com/thegreatindoors, for a cornucopia of assets, back episodes, videos, and so forth. Now, we'll be back next week for episode 9, the penultimate episode in this season, for more great conversations. And until then, I'm Matthew Roberts for Amdocs, still here in Barcelona, and have a great day wherever you are.